This is...
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. Politrix.
Welcome back to our What a Week, hashtag Politrix. Now, politics is one of those spheres that is always changing. So some people aren't always surprised by the shifts that happen. However, when it comes to commentators of politics, many people like to maintain a certain way of things. We gave him a modified title last week, which some people questioned. So please, give a wow welcome back to our Minister of Interpretation, Votsang Modimo wa me Moilwa. Welcome back, brother man.
Thanks, Brother Fresh. Good morning. Morning to the viewers and followers. I am very comfortable to resume my original title of interpreting politics, not a meteorologist of politics.
Tell us about your top, Botsa Botsang. Is that available? Can we buy it? Can we support you?
Look, it's my brand. Remember towards the end of last year?
Yes, sir.
I decided to stop wearing international brands, the famous brands. I will still wear my Nike, Adidas, and Puma that I have.
Sure.
But I'm making clothes that I wear, my own brand.
Ah.
And I've started even selling them. They are not in shops. I make from scratch. Design, make, label, and sell to you according to your body type.
Ah, yeah. So it's tailor-made.
Tailor-made.
Botsang couture.
Yeah. So the main focus is primarily on golf shirts.
Yes, sir.
And I learned, you know, from a friend of mine, Sahala Rapetswa, taught me the difference between skipper, T-shirt, and golf shirt. And I got so hurt that I decided to say I'm going to make golf shirts. So my target market is golf players,
okay,
with caps and T-shirts or golf shirts. And then it will expand with time. But yeah, you will see Botsang brand mushrooming a lot.
Hopefully you'll make me something that I can wear for next week.
Next week, don't push it, Fresh. I've got so many orders now in the near future. I've got a lot of orders.
Trust me, you'll have a hell of a lot more orders if you make me.
If you wear one. Yeah. Okay, we'll talk about that.
Right now, let's go back to the January 8th statement of January 13, I think it was.
Yes.
Tell us your thoughts. Did it live up to expectation? Any surprises?
Look, the only surprise I have from the January 8th statement of the ruling African National Congress is that they even failed to address the current affairs. The statement came on January the 13th, but look, I did not expect it. I said it in our last show. I did not expect fireworks from that statement. There is nothing that the ANC as a ruling party can talk to new that will make us jump, except the rhetoric, except what we know that they've created houses, they've, you know, abortion facilities, they've improved the life of black people and social grants. You know, those are the things they can shine with. But as a state and as a governing party, they failed to live up to basic fundamental requirements that they promised people since 1994. Free, basic, and quality education, safety of the people in the country, and the return of the land to the majority of the people. They failed to smile on those fundamental principles. But again, you know, I listened to President Ramaphosa reading that the January 8th statement. And when it came to very critical issues like security, like electricity crisis in the country, the cost of living and unemployment, he was like passing. You know, he passed those areas very fast. And I think those are the areas that they were supposed to focus on and concentrate on in order to respond to the crisis and the needs of the nation. And I'm the person who have said on this platform and various other platforms and said, us critiquing the ANC on its failures, which are mainly caused by maladministration and corruption,
sure,
does not mean we are putting a blind eye on the good things that they have done. A human settlement or housing, South Africa is number one in the world in provision of low-cost, if not free housing, basic housing. And they've done extremely well. No other country compares to
us. I was going to say, not only number one in the world, probably one of very few countries that do it.
No other country compares to us. And those are some of the things we are acknowledge them. Whether it was a good plan, whether it was because they had proper ministers there. You can look from the time of Tokyo Sekgwale. Mm. You can look at, I can't remember who was before Tokyo Sekgwale. If it was not Joe Slove, I can't remember very well. But you can look at the ladies who occupied those positions, Lindiwe Zulu, Lindiwe Susulu, Mamoloko Kubayi. I think they've been deploying very competent and capable in those positions. But I also think the African National Congress has done very well in sticking to its plan regarding housing. All other things, if in my view it wasn't of corruption and maladministration and deploying the wrong people in those positions, they could have still done well. Education is one of the worst that we find ourselves in as a nation. But there's room for improvement. It is going to be very difficult. You know, the January 8th statement normally sets the tone, especially on an election year. It is going to be very difficult this election year and for the next 12 months to can live to that statement because of the challenges that the political party is facing, the divisions within the party, not only the breakaways, there's also divisions inside.
Within,
you understand? So I think it's going to be very difficult, but nothing to take home.
Sure. In fact, you mentioned the state of education. The matric results are out.
Yes, the matric results are out. Well, our education system, it's at its worst state. I'm sad to say that fresh. We started by, you know, worsening the curriculum. We started by actually, you know, creating the percentage lower than the traditionally average percentage of education. And if you also look at the mood in the country, nothing is so exciting that matric results are out. You know, last year there was legislation.
No, but now they're out already or are they coming out?
The results are out, you know, if we are sitting and talking, the results are out. Yeah. And the future still looks bleak.
Sure.
The future still looks, there's A's and A's here and there, but I think our whole education system needs a revamp. You know, it needs
What would that revamp look like?
First of all, I would recommend the change of the curriculum and the methodologies used. I'm not an educationist, but the methodologies used. For example, this thing of dropping the pass rate and what they call not a pass rate, but a progression system to progress from one class to another. It catches up with us when these kids reach matric where they have to pass. You understand? To can move to university. At matric, you have to pass. It's not progression. Now, if you are a learner and you are accustomed to a progression kind of system, to say, we will push you, now you have done a little bit bad, but we can push you. That's the first part. The second part is the percentage rate, guys. Why did we drop the bar of a pass rate? Why did we 50? You know, me and you, when we grew up, when we were at school, our parents will beat us for getting 51%. They will call it madoda score.
50 was not good enough.
It was not good enough.
It's never been good enough.
And we still drop the bar. We will not be punishing our kids. You understand? When we do that, we will actually be forcing them to work harder. Now they don't. You can see even the kids, they do homework for the sake of doing homework. I've done homework with my kids. They do homework because ma'am or sir said I have homework to do with dad. And we just do it for the sake of. But also what we need, and I said it yesterday in some parents' platform that I was engaged in, to say another thing that we dropped the ball in, and I'm not going to blame politicians, it's us as parents. Our level of participation as parents in the fundamental a foundation education of our kids at primary level, you know, at grade R and primary level. We as parents, we need to start participating more in that in order to help our kids. You know, like I said, I remember my mom used to take a lesokwane. What is lesokwane in English? A wooden cooking a spoon.
Yes. A wooden spoon, yes.
Yeah, to hit in our knuckles if she was sitting there helping us with homework. So that collective engagement in uplifting the education of the kids, it's very important. But the system, I am one of the people who are pushing that the neo-colonial education system we inherited from the apartheid government, it has to change. The history that is being taught to our kids at school, it needs to change. And that's why today when people listen to hashtag politics on our What a Week platform, educated adults are saying, I never knew this. Then you can ask yourself, how does it that an adult who is educated, who is working, never knew what we talk about here. People never knew that who's Robert Sobukwe. People never knew who is the longest.
It should be general knowledge.
It should be general knowledge. And history and culture intertwined.
Sure.
So if we don't know our history, it's going to also be very difficult to create a very proud nation without a cultural picture. And we should start instilling that. And I wish people like Mayor Angie Motshekga, if she doesn't resign and retire by now, like Menkosana Dlamini Zuma, can be open not only to academics. They should be open to general South African public to opinionate in the system of education that we need for our kids.
Sure.
Unlike where we find ourselves at the moment. And I think those are some of the things, if I was in an influential position, I will influence the government to start moving towards that direction.
Premier Lesufi tweeted the other day about how, why on earth do we even have two separate exams being written, and that because the kids are all going to meet at varsity. So why are we having two different streams? What are your thoughts on that?
Again, Premier Lesufi is a very senior and influential, powerful ANC leader, which is the ruling party. That's number one. Number two, he was regarded as one of the best MECs of Gauteng. He was the MEC of education in Gauteng. Why would he sit and say that now when he's a premier, when he was in a portfolio that could have influenced that situation? What did Premier Banyaza Lesufi do when he was an MC? It is not late. I agree with him why should we have two sets of exams? But Mr. Lesufi is making a mistake. The Constitution provides for private education. It is enshrined in the constitution of this country. So Banyaza is not supposed to be screaming at Twitter or at X. I still call it Twitter. You can see I'm old school. He should not be doing that. He should be raising this matter, one, in an ANC caucus meeting of the NEC. He's an ANC member.
Sure.
And start pushing those who are in parliament to influence the amendment of the, if that's what he wants. I don't think merely clustering one or all students into one box will solve the education problems. I don't think having one exam will solve the problems.
We have bigger problems than that.
You know, which exam are we going to be talking about? Who's going to set the exam? Are you going to say the children of the rich who are in private school, that is allowed by the constitution of the country, will be forced to write the public service exams, or are you saying the public service student, who in my view majority are not trained and brought up at a level of what private schools are doing, are you saying they should migrate there? It's going to have a constitutional conflict. And I think we should not focus on that. We should focus on improving the public service form of education.
It's bad enough already there are kids who still haven't been placed in schools, but they're not allowed to go directly to schools either.
Yes.
So we have this system that is supposed to, I suppose, make things easier, streamline, applying for grade 1 and grade 8. But it's letting a lot of people down. There are people who have kids who have not been placed even last year.
Year in, year out. First of all, Gauteng provincial government, and I know the Western Cape and others are doing it, but being in Gauteng, the Gauteng provincial government introduced over 4 or 5 years ago during Lesufi's time as the MEC of Education, an electronic form of registering, and it gets opened in July, well in advance. But since that time, people started blaming the system. It had glitches naturally at the beginning, and they were resolved. But still, with those electronic or system gadgets being resolved or glitches, we still have an administrative problem that the government can explain. What is it that you still have a 6 or 7 year old child who is supposed to be in class, you know, by when the schools opened on Wednesday, and those kids and parents are still queuing, they're still waiting for programs? Yes, the government is also having problems of urbanization, excess influx, and immigrants of kids that were born here 6, 7 years back, and our constitution allows them to be at school. They have that problem, but I think with proper planning, because the application to go to grade 1 and grade 8 opens in July, closes around end of October, November, with proper planning and proper administration, I think the challenges could be very, very minimal. But we must also own up as a nation that there are parents. Mm. It has happened with me last year when my daughter started school, because of the situation in my life, that I only started looking for school in January. Mm. But that was one of the different cases, and I wouldn't blame government for that. Mm. But we also have a responsibility as citizens and as parents. But it also, Fresh, I'll tell you, I live, and I must be very careful not to use words that may offend our viewers. I live in a prime area. I live in an area where I'm surrounded by very good public schools, as well as exceptionally good private schools that I can afford. And you must see how people from the neighboring areas like Olivenhout, Tembisa, Attridgeville, and so forth want to have people to come and study in Centurion or Irene area. You understand? Mm-hmm. And I understand why. I understand the needs of those people. But also, there's an element, and I've picked it up, of us being dishonest nation. Sure. Somebody lives in an address that they are not supposed to be at that school. Then they request a friend to use their address. And it happens a lot.
In fact, the system has a lot of kids who are living with guardians.
Absolutely.
But chances are they have a parent somewhere, you know, either in a township or in a different area.
Yes,
but
yes.
Because you want your child to be in Parktown, yeah, all exactly. Of a sudden they have a guardian in Parktown. Why are we not upgrading our township schools? Why are we not having our schools be so good that going to a private school is simply because you want to do it for the hell of it?
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a, you know, my friend is Norwegian, lives in Norway. Mm-hmm. And that public schools are so good. It's, you know, you it's the mega rich that will go to private schools.
Yeah.
Because the public schools are so good.
Actually, let me tell you.
The healthcare is so good that no one goes private. No one gets medical aid.
People who go private is people who don't want to associate with the common.
It becomes a class thing.
It's a class thing. It's not because it's not a
money thing.
But let me tell you, in a country which is at par with South Africa, like Brazil, and I can tell, do you know when I was stationed there?
Yeah.
Children of rich people would queue and fight to go to public schools than to private ones. That's how good public schools are in Brazil. Mm. And Brazil is not a rich country. It's at par with us in terms of development, and it's a developing country. That's how good it is, understand? It's so good that when I was stationed in Brazil, my children, I did not allow them to go to private international schools that your taxes would have paid for as a diplomat.
Yes.
I did not, for two reasons. The public schools were damn good, and I was preparing myself so that the day I come back to South Africa and I can't afford a private school, my kids must be accustomed to being in the crowded classes and matters like that. Let me make an example. If you go to the area where I live, there's Irene Primary, which is a public school, one of the top primary schools in Gauteng. Mm. Then there's South Downs College, which is five times the price of Irene Primary. Then there's Crawford College, which is four times the price of Irene Primary. I would rather have my kids in Irene Primary. Mm. And the people from Olivenhout, Bosch, and Tembisa and other surrounding township, they will also use their friends and aunties and adoptive parents' addresses within Centurion and Irene to take their schools or their children in those schools, in those public schools. Mm. But you are right. We need to upgrade the status.
We know what we need to fix.
We know what we need
But we also know there's an influx. Why are we not building schools then? I mean, you look at the north of Jersey, and all you see is complex after complex after complex. I haven't seen a new school being built. I haven't seen a new clinic being built. I haven't seen a new hospital being built.
I'm not
seeing roads being upgraded. I'm not seeing sewer systems being upgraded. But you are seeing complex after complex going up.
It's lack of vision.
Why are we not planning based on, we know exactly the influx problem we have. We know exactly the numbers based on previous years.
It's lack of vision.
And we can project.
That people don't have a vision. People who are in the powers of this country make those decisions. They don't have a vision. And also it's being caused by the fact that they are not living in a real South Africa. Some of them, their kids, you know, I was saying to somebody yesterday, after the French Minister of Education saga, she was appointed last week, she's already been sacked, to say, she is better she put her children in a private school in France, and she's sacked for that. Let me tell you, in South Africa, in Africa generally, the politicians don't even put their children in private schools. They even take them abroad.
Yeah.
So they don't even trust the private schools around. They even take them abroad. Mm. And it's because they know that we are in a situation whereby they failed to develop what they found as existing township schools. But again, we should also look at it historically. The creation of townships, or black townships, if I may call them that way, it was already a wrong thing that was supposed to cluster people as pigs in a township. You understand? Mm-hmm. And the ANC, or the current Democratic, government led by the ANC, failed to correct that measure. Instead, the leading ANC in government created more townships.
True.
And I say, and I'm one of the people who have been saying, why did we endorse, if we said creation of townships, it was displacement of black people from their own land and displaced by the apartheid government, moving people from Sophia Town, throwing them into Soweto, and moving them from Madubulaville, creating Motlakeng Township. If we are saying that was wrong, why are we continuing to create the model? We have to give housing, we have to create infrastructure, and I agree, but why did we model it in a township methodology that was created by the apartheid government? And that's where the problem is. There are many schools that were built. For example, this week, do you remember the story of Mayibuye Primary School in Tembisa? The school, state-of-the-art school, that was built and completed in 2017 under Ntate Panyaza Lusufi. In 2017, that school was completed. Fresh, can you believe that no child has ever set a foot in that school? Year in, year out, there are problems with flooding, infrastructure, contractors fighting. The government promised that this week, when the schools opened on Wednesday, children will be admitted in that school. Children were accepted on the system. Guess what? It didn't happen. The school will only be ready to use in February. Construction is still taking place. Furniture is still being brought in. What did the government do for the month of November and December, when they've already declared last year in October that the school will open come Wednesday, the 17th of January, 2024? What did they do?
Is this the one that was built next to a sewer line?
Yes, the one that was built next to, you must see the infrastructure there.
No, it's state of the art. 82 million rand spent on that
school. Also, that was a problem. How do you spend 82 million rand in building a school, and after 2017 to today, how many years are they? 3 plus 4, 7 years, the school is still not functioning, it's still being repaired. And 82 million has went into it. Those are some of the challenges. The government has policies. The government has good plans and good intentions. The people they place there, the tenders and the construction mafia, they don't care about the children that they're supposed to build schools for. We should apply the Sankara oath, you know, where if we are building a school in Tembisa, at a section, let's say section 11 of Tembisa, as an example, we must go and identify contractors from section 11 of Tembisa, Ambach people, bricklayers, painters, to build that school for their children, because they've got vested interest and they will do the right thing. If you are going to give the contract to Botsang, who's staying in Centurion, to build a school in Attridgeville, do you think I will care about whether the school is finished on time or not? My motive is profit. Yes. It's not creating school for my children. So what we should do, we should make people do and things that are going to benefit them as a community. That's where the government is supposed to be working with communities in building infrastructure and developing areas for their own benefit.
Sure.
If you live in Ramotsiri Street somewhere in South Africa, let the people who live in Ramotsiri Street be awarded jobs to can build the tar road and the pavement on that street. Unlike taking somebody from outside, it will instill pride in people.
Sure.
You know, I grew up in a township where we didn't have tar road until in the early 90s. On my street, my garden, every year used to win seeds from the municipality because I had the best lawn and best garden, year in, year out. Was I a good gardener? No, but it was pride instilled in me to say, garden at home has to look good. And if we must go back to that, give people responsibilities and stop with container schools that are becoming permanent. It is good to have container schools in Ntate Panyaza and the team. But once that container school, which is supposed to be temporary, becomes a permanent structure,
we have a problem.
We have a problem.
Let's move to what is probably going to be a contentious issue for the next 3-4 weeks. Bafana Bafana. So Bafana Bafana lost to Mali a couple of days ago.
Yes.
And obviously still the group stages, and there's still hope for Bafana Bafana. But at a level of administration and politics, what are your thoughts?
Well, Fresh, and let our followers and viewers not be surprised. Why do we talk of sports on this platform?
Yes,
politics are everywhere. You know, we have said it before. That's why we, at some stage, discussed the rugby situation and the history of the rugby in South Africa. My thoughts, Bafana Bafana will go nowhere. And I'm not saying this because I am unpatriotic. It's because I'm hating. You know, we are both dressed in black today. We are mourning what happened during the course of the week to Bafana Bafana losing 2-0 to Mali. But Fresh, if somebody asks me, is Bafana Bafana a bad team? No, they are not a bad team. If you look at 8 of the players who were on the starting lineup, they were from Mamelodi Sundowns, which are the African champions, one of the best clubs in the world at the moment. So we cannot be said to be bad. There is talent there. The problem is the politics in SAFA, as well as the administration of SAFA. And I've heard a lot of former, you know, soccer players and heroes, the Lucas Radebe, the Dr. Kumalos, and the Steve Kompelas of this country have been saying, maybe it's about time that Denny Jordan, the leader of SAFA, and his entourage, they must vacate those seats. They have done their job, and now they are damaging the job that they have done. The problems with SAFA and soccer in South Africa, or football, is the same as cricket in South Africa. Look at institutions or sporting codes that have administrative problems with political interference are the ones that are performing very bad, you understand? And I think that Denny Jordan has done it. But also, by the way, and no offense to the ANC, that Denny Jordan is ANC. And we know that where ANC leaders who are imposed on people, you can look at the history of this country, how messy they become. He messed up the Nelson Mandela Bay called Qeverha today as a mayor. He is continuing to mess up in SAFA. The gentleman has done his job. He must make way. You know, I invite our followers to go and find a book written by a former sports journalist, Silo Rabutap, if I'm not wrong. He wrote a book about the life and the history of Solomon Sticks Morewa.
Sure.
And again, we look at the soccer of South Africa. There's politics there. Solomon Sticks Morewa was a Pan-Africanist and who was pushed aside by when the ANC came into power. Denny Jordan is ANC. He is messing up SAFA and he should move. That's one element. The second element that I bring politics into SAFA is, where in this world have you seen a foreigner coaching a national team? You understand? I will not support Bafana Bafana.
Isn't it happening across half of the continent?
Well, only in Africa. Only in Africa. Where is patriotism in that instance? You know, this reminds me a story. I think it was during the World Cup France in 1998. I was stationed in Germany and I went to the World Cup match. South Africa was playing France, coincidentally.
Sure.
Guess what happened? My ambassador at that time was Melindiwe Mabuza. May her soul rest in peace. I was with her, hosted by Ambassador Barbara Masekela, and we were with Dr. Ivan Khoza.
Sure.
And during the game, Mama Buza asked me, Botsang, who's that white man? Who's the manager? She knew it was a manager of South Africa. And when I told her that it was Philippe Trossier, a French coach in South Africa, when South Africa was playing France in France, she became purple. You know, she turned to Dr. Khoza and said, Ivan, where are your liberation struggle credentials and lessons? How do you have a French man coaching South Africa while we are playing France in France? You understand? If you also look at the history of South African soccer, I'm not a soccer administrator and I've never played soccer in my life. But if you look at the history of soccer in this country, Fresh, the best performance of Bafana Bafana in all spheres was when Bafana Bafana was coached by local coaches. Ephraim Jomo Sono, the late Clive Parker, Shakes Mashaba. Look at the history of Bafana Bafana. They performed better and they achieved levels when they were coached by locals. Now you ask yourself politically, why would we as a nation stand up, break our hearts, take a foreign white man who doesn't know Kasi flavor type of football to come and coach Kasi boys? And we expect to win a continental tournament. And for me, that does not make sense. And we should rise politically and patriotically and say, get a local coach, one of the best coaches in the world today. It's our own Peter Musimani. that we booed and we pushed out, we never gave him an opportunity to can build Bafana Bafana the way he did with Sundowns, the way he did with Al Ahly, and any other team he has laid his hands on. What's wrong with us, guys?
But many would argue Bafana haven't performed at this level and been on the streak they've been in, you know, over the last year in a very long time. And that maybe this is the best man for the job, currently.
You know, fresh. You guys, what I always say in politics, you like to settle for crumbs and settle for less. You win, you become the best when you win tournaments.
Mm.
You can't tell me they are playing beautiful when they are not scoring goals. You understand? It doesn't work like that. You win tournaments, you score goals. You don't play soccer beautiful. You don't play a beautiful game. So let us all agree that we may scream and tumble and talk of how they are playing a beautiful soccer, but they are not winning games. And they've been. It doesn't start now with, what is his name, Brooks or Brooms, whatever his name is.
Hugo Bruce.
Yeah, Hugo Bruce or Hugo Bruce. It is not about playing well. It's about scoring goals and winning games. They've been doing it even before him. When we had those Brazilian coaches, they were still playing beautiful. Before him, with Stuart Baxter, they were still playing very well. We keep on saying, Bafana Bafana played very well today. They were better. The next game, they played very well. They will advance. We always hope for the referees, the technicalities, the backdoor administrative wins instead of the field wins. No. We are downgrading our soccer levels. And I think we should start by changing the management of SAFA.
Mm.
But changing of management, it has elections and politics in it. We should start by firing Books and getting a local coach. Bizumuziman is here. He's idling. He's looking for a job. He's here. And he's at his best at the moment. Lucas Radebe has raised his hand to say, I'm prepared to be the administrator of SAFA, very well respected and decorated former South African captain.
Mm.
He's more respected in Leeds in England than in South Africa. Dr. Khumalo has been a coach. You know, at some stage, Kaizer Chiefs, our losing club, was performing best when it was co-coached by Donald A. Skuze, my homeboy, and Dr. Khumalo. Remember when they were caretaker coach?
Yes, sir.
They did very well until Dr. Kaizer Motaung went and hired a foreigner to come and mess up Kaizer Chiefs even further, and we are not rising from those ashes. But I'm saying we should be patriotic as a country. We should hire local coaches who understand the language of South African football. In that instance, we will do well as a nation. For now, we are doomed.
Let's stay in within sport and talk about cricket South Africa. There's a case that has been brewing currently. There's a Jewish kid who is a captain of the under 19 men's team.
Yes.
And last year in October, at a award ceremony honoring achievers within the Jewish community, he won an award.
Yes.
Which he dedicated to the Israeli Defense Force and all the troops there. This was literally a week or two after October the 7th.
October the 7th, yes.
And then Cricket South Africa did a whole inquiry. They looked into it and they found that he had not transgressed anything within what is expected of their players.
Mm-hmm.
But they've still gone ahead and stripped him of the captain, saying for security reasons. But surely if security is a problem, they should strip him of his colors.
What? Yes.
Oh, no, of the colors of him being in the team, not just of the captaincy. Do you think Cricket SA are playing us in claiming and hiding behind security? But also, the way I see it, as long as your code of conduct allows for people to hold whatever views, whether you agree with those views or not, allow them to hold the views.
Yep.
Because if this child believes the IDF are doing a great job or their response was what it should have been after October 7, you know, there's a kid out there who might believe something else.
Yeah.
There's a kid out there who's a Christian and might believe, well, now you're a heathen if you're not a Christian.
Yep.
Like, where do we stop then in punishing, especially children?
Look,
or young adults.
Fresh, I'm glad you are correcting it. I was going to start by saying at 19, you're not a child. According to South African, you know, legal and system, you are a full adult when you reach 18.
Mm.
That person is an adult who knew what he was doing. But earlier on, when we spoke about SAFA and Bafana Bafana, I started by saying, look at you know, sporting codes where the administration is a mess. They are performing very bad. Mm. And I mentioned Cricket South Africa. Mm. They are having a double standard, and you are correct. For Cricket South Africa to say, for making those utterances and dedicating your award, personal award, because it's personal,
yes,
to the Israel Defense Force. He is a Jew child. He believes the Israel in the Israel Defense Force, and he's wearing South African colors. So why do you reduce him from being the captain and you still allow him to wear South African colors?
Exactly.
And Cricket South Africa is going to go around the world, toward the world, and that's where the security point comes in. Mm. That they may be attacked everywhere in the world. I don't know if you will recall, and to our viewers, what happened in Munich in I think it was 1970 or 1972 Olympics.
Yes.
Whereby there was an attack on Olympians and all those things. So those are some of the risks that when people make utterances against with regard to any conflicts in the world, we must be very careful as sporting people to say you are the captain of a national team. You are seen to be representing, I don't know how many people go into the cricket squad, the total number of the people in that squad. So as they travel the world, as they go to areas whereby you have pronounced on a political position, you are putting them at risk. But I think it was not a fair and a just move by Cricket South Africa to partially punish this captain. You understand? If he has done wrong and he has broken the code of conduct, and you refer to the code of conduct, did he break the code of conduct? Cricket South Africa is supposed to come to us and say, yes, this is the code of conduct, this reference number or this paragraph or this clause that he has broken. Therefore, we are stripping him the captaincy and maybe, you know, put a punishment to say, for the next 3 months, you know, like they do in soccer, he will not be playing or he will not be traveling with the team for making such utterances. I think them being silent on that matter, it is because there's no code that he broke. You understand? And they are putting a problem now to say, so are the Palestinian supporters of the Cricket South Africa going to suppress their support? Or the Christian community who says,
absolutely,
we don't want it. So they are...
If a player takes a knee, that is also political.
Exactly.
Now do we suspend that person? And I think CSA are setting a very dangerous precedent by deciding and then lying to us.
Telling us the truth.
They're lying.
Yeah.
Because if security is a problem, then make sure there's security at the games.
And they're playing... They are also playing on a very, you know, dangerous platform. The Jews own and govern this country financially, whether we like it or not. They tell the, you know, the battle between the Stellenbosch rich people, the Ruperts and the Jews, and the ANC leaders having been supported and fed by the Jews for all along. I will not be surprised that the Cricket South Africa, some of its sponsorship come from Jewish-owned businesses. And what if those people start pulling a plug? We have seen how the Jews community in the whole world have responded, even if they are divided. Some are saying what is happening in Gaza and West Bank, it's not right. Some are saying, yes, we are Jews, but we are not proud of what the Zionists are doing. They even segment themselves.
Sure.
And I think Cricket South Africa, if they wanted to engage the captain, they would have had a private meeting and say, we have engaged and we think next time be careful and you leave it there.
Sure.
That is management of human capital in that instance. You know, like unlike issuing statement, you know, stripping off the captaincy, now they've created a platform whereby we want more. We want to know what rule did he broke. We want to know why this, you know, little punishment.
No rule was broken. That's the thing.
There is no rule that was broken, and I don't think they handled it properly.
Absolutely. Let's move to the IEC and the MK party and
our troublemaker,
former president and dude who's asked to be suspended longer than most people and is still not suspended or expelled, former president JZ. What's been happening with the IEC, sir?
You know, Fresh, I think Mtate Gehlie Gizazuma should have asked either Jomo Sono or Nelson Mandela to borrow him their names. If you know, Jomo Sono used to be called the troublemaker.
Ah, yes.
And Nelson Mandela's middle name, the R, is then for Rholihlahla, which I've learned in Xhosa, it means the one who steers trouble. And I think Zuma is leaving what Jomo Sono was in the field and what Mandela name said. The man is continuing to cause problems for this country. And look, what happened is, I do not know who ignited the IEC to can respond, whether it's the ANC or it's DA or it's concerned citizens of this country, to say to the IEC, Jacob Zuma is a criminal. Remember, he's got a fresh criminal record. It's not even 1 year old.
Hold on. Do you think all of that might have been to fix this now?
To fix what?
The criminal record you refer to.
Well, look.
Was it like a preemptive strike?
Look, I think those who jailed and who made sure Jacob Zuma has a criminal record, they outclassed many. They were thinking up front to say this man may try and do a comeback. Yeah, no, fresh. Look, that man was sent to jail without proper legal procedures. You know, he commits a crime that deserves a magistrate court to say you are in contempt of court. The law in this country, if you are in contempt of court, it goes to the magistrate court. The magistrate court, the prosecutor, they charge you, then they sentence you. Zuma was charged and sentenced by the constitutional court. It jumped all other courts. I think they were planning to block him. But they've created a problem because I don't think President Zuma has an ambition to be the president again. I do not think so. Sure. On a serious note, he's 80 years old. Mm. He's frail and all that.
Maybe member of parliament.
Maybe, you know, to steer trouble only and to deal with the ANC. But now the IEC in responding, now this is where our education comes to the electorate. When you are becoming a political office bearer, whether in the municipality, the province, or provincial government, to be on the list of a political party, you are not supposed to have a criminal record. You know, when I was active in politics 2013, 2014, I could not be in a party list that I belonged to that time because I still had an active criminal record, which has been expunged in 2016. Now you cannot be. The IEC does not allow that. Ntate Jacob Zuma has a criminal record that he was sentenced. And now listen to how smart these people were. And this is where I want people to pay attention. The IEC Act, it is very explicit to say if you are sentenced to prison for a period of 12 months or above without an option of paying a fine. So even Tate Zuma was sentenced to prison for, how much was it, 15 months or whatever, but with an option of saying pay 10,000 rand fine, he will be eligible to be a candidate or in the party list. So already in 2023, when they sentenced him, understand, or 2022, they already did not give him an option of a fine. So he's got a full criminal record of above 12 months, so he doesn't qualify to be a candidate in a party list. Jeez. That is the status, and that is the IEC Act. But let me also go further and say, besides that part, that Zuma does not qualify, and I'm supporting what I said last week, that Zuma is not going to be the president of MK. He has no ambition, because the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa does not allow the third term. Even if MK want President Zuma to be there, as they will have to get two-thirds majority and to change the constitution of the country, which is highly unlikely. It will not happen, even with a coalition of another party. Two-thirds majority is not possible to make him a comeback. So I think he has grasped the country, attention is focused on Zuma. You can see people are already talking about the IEC, the criminal record and all that. It is dividing their attention. They are losing the focus in a sense that if they would allow him to campaign for MK, I said last week, the ANC must blue chicken Tate Zuma. Now, if they are going to dig more and more, they are actually going to say to the laymen on the street and the voters and the potential supporters, or the supporters and the potential voters of MK. They are saying to them, Liam Mona, they should remember how Zuma raised to power in Polokwane. It was because he was being seen as being tormented.
Sure.
Understand? As being charged and allegations and this, and that propelled him. They are playing into those hands again, and they are not being smart about it. But
so don't martyr the man by expelling the
just
man.
Leave the old man to enjoy his, you know, octogenarian age and his politics and his MK. Stop giving him more platform. But I think he is looking at them and laughing at them to say, I got them. And yesterday I had an argument with one of my brothers on what do you call it, on our family group, who is very anti-Zuma and pro-ANC. And he kept on quoting the IC Act to me. And I said, look at you. You are an ANC. You are swamped into whether Zuma is a criminal record and he qualifies or not. I even said to him, there is nothing wrong in the MK or any other political party to have a mascot. I use the term mascot. If the MK party is going to use Fresh and Botsang and Zuma and Pinky and Petronella to be on the ballot paper or on the billboards and placards, there's nothing wrong with that. There is no regulation that governs that. They can use anybody. We spoke even
yeah,
about...
Yeah, didn't they use a judge the other day?
Exactly. They used the judge the other day. But again, using a judge is far-fetched. But let me remind South Africa that when COPE was formed, if you recall very well, Ntate Dandala, Hlomla Dandala's father.
Yes.
I think he's a reverend or a pastor.
Hlomla was on the show yesterday.
Yes. And Hlomla Dandala was the face of COPE at some stage.
Yes.
And what was he? He was a model. He was on the GQ magazine. He was an actor. He was an actor.
He was just a model. You make it seem like he's just a pretty boy there.
No, man. look, Fresh, if I mention GQ magazine or Q magazine, is not just a model, but he was an actor. Yeah. You know, and when COPE used him on their billboards and as the face of COPE, it's not because he was a politician. He was not a candidate for COPE. That is allowed. So if MK Party is using Zuma now to steer trouble and to rattle the ANC and the ANC gets rattled, then they don't know politics and they are not smart. And I still say, by the way, on Wednesday, the MK party issued a list of their leadership all over the country, in all provinces, the coordinators and the conveners of all provinces. So they are gradually mentioning who are their leaders. Trust me, they are going to wait for the last minute and after engagements with other political parties to can announce who is their presidential candidate. And they're doing it very smart. Now people are pressing buttons to try and see who is their presidential candidate. And they're not going to do it now. They want to keep people guessing. And remember, three now, and I said it last week, I think your nails are distracting me. Now I can see what the followers were saying. On a serious note, guys, I'm talking to Fresh and I see his nails.
Okay, I'm hiding the nails. The nails are gone.
So we said last week, and I said three political parties in South Africa in the past week are going to announce teaming up with MK. It has happened. You know, the BLF has announced, the AAA AM has announced, Act of Ntate Ismail Kgashule has announced that they are going with MK formally. You understand? So again, those news were broken on this platform.
Exactly. You predicted it.
Yes, yes.
Just like you predicted the fact that chances are America and the UK will be next at the International Court of Justice.
Papers are being drawn now. Yeah. You know, I said it. I said immediately after. And it was last week's show.
Absolutely.
I said immediately after, South Africa is going to go now. And other countries are going to go for the UK and the US. Mm. Papers are being prepared as we are sitting here. Mm. So
are you a prophet by any chance?
No.
Go deeper, Papa. Go deeper, Papa.
Fresh, I am not a prophet. I'm not even a graduate in politics, except in public admin.
Yes.
I pay attention to what is happening and the trends in the political landscape of the world, and I inform myself. Mm. I don't want to sit in front of our viewers and the world. This platform has become an international platform now, being viewed even by you know, other broadcasting you know, studios are looking at this platform. Mm. You can't come. You inform yourself and you look at the trend in the world.
Sure.
I'm looking at the trend in the world, and I told people that it was actually faster than I thought. I never thought it will happen this week.
Sure.
That the South Africa case is making the UK and the US jump around.
That's so, no.
It's difficult. Yeah, no.
So, former President JZ met with the PAC.
Yes, yes.
So, what are your thoughts on that meeting?
Look, First of all, the PAC announced that meeting prior it happened. The PAC leader, Moafrika Nyonso, went to KwaZulu-Natal not only to meet President Zuma, but to also meet some church leaders there who are very influential in South African politics. And in him responding, and I like what the PAC president has said. The PAC president said he corrected the media reports that the PAC is going to meet MK President Zuma. Zuma is not MK president. He is not even an MK member. He's an ANC member who endorses MK. And the president of the PAC says they went to meet the former head of state like they're meeting all other politicians. That's number one.
Yes.
But number two, Fresh, being a Pan-Africanist, and I've been playing with this statement a lot, if you look at the five cardinal pillars of the PAC, the very first pillar of the PAC, as invented by Mangalisa Sobukwe when the PAC was formed, you know, in 1959. The very first one, that's why they've got an open palm salute. You know, these are the five cardinal pillars. The first one, it says, rally and unite the African people under the banner of African nationalism.
Okay.
Understand? And all African people, from Cape to Cairo, Morocco to Madagascar, all, let's rally and unite them. And what have we been crying about in South Africa? We are fragmented. That's why we are weak. We divide the black or the African vote. That's why we are weak. Now, the PAC is saying, we do not care of our political differences, whether you are a Chartist or you are an Africanist. Anybody who is talking far left politics, is talking the return of the land, is talking about us coming together and uniting the far left vote, we will talk to those people.
So
nothing unbecoming to it. And why would we try as a nation when two black political leaders, very influential political leaders, historically and currently in the country, meet to talk about unity? We cannot say the PAC is weak, they are opportunists, and why are they talking to Zuma? That's not how we should be thinking. We should be saying, finally, the black leaders of the far left are meeting. Andile Mkhitama, the leader of the Black First Land First, went and met President Zuma, the PAC leader. And the AAAM, the African you know, Pentecostal church leaders, they met with President Zuma. They understand. So there is nothing wrong in black people uniting. You know, our people must start being realistic, man. What's wrong when me and my neighbor that we didn't talk a lot for many years because my pit bull is making noise, and then we decide to say, let's sit down and have peace and how we can manage this thing? It is progressive politics. We are progressing as a nation. In uniting and talking unity. Whether it is the unity against the ANC or the unity against white capital, it's immaterial. What is important is seeing black people uniting. Understand?
And finding a common cause and a common issue to deal with.
Exactly. And that's what we need in this country. And I always make an example with myself. I said to people, I'm a hardcore Pan-Africanist. I was born one. But all my other life, I've been serving the ANC-led government. With pride and dignity. You understand? I didn't sit there with a badge to say I'm a Pan-Africanist and these are Chartists. No, no, it doesn't work like that.
Or become some sort of
hostile.
Or hostile or do a go slow, but only you know that it's a go slow, or start sabotaging things. Because you are doubt about it.
Yes, and that's what we should be doing.
At some stage, everything must be about what's in the best interest of this country.
Absolutely.
Full stop.
Yes. You are right. That's what we should do. If all of us, as South Africans, as human beings, as people, we can work for the best interest of this country. You understand? I said, you know, many times, people think when I expose and break down where the ANC has failed, I'm anti-ANC. You understand? No, I'm not. I'm actually helping them indirectly to realize where they can improve, because as an outsider, I don't have vested interest.
They
can't howl me to Lutile House and tell me to shut up, unfortunately for them and fortunately for me. But they can take a leaf of the discussions we have here from a person who has no interest, except that I'm a South African, I want things to work. Understand? I want the water drainage system to work. I want the education system to work. I want clean public administration. I want less corruption in the country. I want the police to stop taking Coca-Cola bribes, you know, not because I hate Coca-Cola, but
you want a country that works.
I want a country that works for the best interest of South Africans in general. And I'm pro-black. I'm not hiding it. I am pro-African. When I see black people getting together, why we don't question when Julius and Bofiki Lembalula go and have have whiskeys and champopos together. We don't question that when they party together, when they go to lavish weddings and parties together. But then once they start sitting in a room and talking politics on how they can work together, we want to question that. It has nothing to do with disloyalty to your political party. It has everything to do with the best interest of the country.
And you know, and it's a level of maturity that I think we all need.
Yes.
If fairly, it's about the country.
Yeah, we need very matured people. You must see the relationship between, I hope they I'm not exposing them. You must see the relationship between General Bonnie Holomisa and Mweletsi Mbeki. Mweletsi Mbeki has never occupied a political office.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You know, they are so close that I actually laughed at them the other day when I'm about to say, you know, guys, if I want to take you down, I know where to find you, and I'll find you both. Mm. They dine together, they lunch together almost 2-3 times a week.
Yes.
You understand? And it shows the level of majority of these adults who care about the interest of this country. So those are some of the political clear minds that we need as a nation.
Absolutely.
We need such pure, clear minds to lead us as a nation. This thing of saying, hey, he's BLF, he's ANC, he's PAC, I don't buy into those politics anymore. I want African unity.
Is he pro-Africa? Is he pro-South Africa?
Exactly. That's what I need.
Answer that question.
Who?
No, I'm just saying.
Oh, generally.
That's the question you must be asking yourself.
Yes, yes. That's what people should be asking myself. Even general people who are not, you know, political activists or political leaders. If we can get to that level, we wouldn't be having a problem with coalitions.
Sure.
We wouldn't be. Mm-hmm. Because the people who occupy those seats, you look at Kenny Kunene, who was known to be a flamboyant sushi man. He has come into politics. He's occupying a very key and strategic position in the biggest metro in Africa.
Sure.
You know, not by size. Tshwane is the biggest by size, but the most important economically. City of Joburg. Whoever thought Kenny Kunene will sit in a political position and work with the ANC guys, with the EFF guys? Have you seen him with Dr. Mtini Twako of the EFF? You know, these are two raging bulls.
Sure.
But for the best interest of the city of Joburg, they are working together.
Sure.
Those are the kind of politics we need in South Africa, whether we like them or not, whether we see them as flamboyant guys or not. That's immaterial. We must look at the work they do on the positions they are occupying.
Absolutely. Botsang, we are out of time. We've clapped another hour.
Yeah. You know, I must mention this guy. He says, you must recognize me. There's a friend of mine. He's Toli. Toli is the follower of this show.
Yes,
he
sir.
Calls himself a behind-the-scenes producer.
Ah.
He's the guy who campaigned that we must move from 45 minutes to at least an hour. But now, as Gurias said, they're now complaining to say, no, even an hour is not enough. The production is expensive, right?
No. And at this rate, we'll be doing twice a week at this rate, totally. So, no.
No, but I think we're doing well. Look, we've been responding very well to the needs and the demands of the followers. The comments are very interesting. Despite your nails, people said they had a very boring year. And, you know, guys, I think I must talk to the show producer, Keleto. We must start having somebody who's grooming fresh. This thing of him thinking he's in a DJ studio when he's on a politics platform is not working for us. I'm not jealous of your nails, my brother.
But you know that nails are political also, though. Because a lot of politicians get their nails into the public purse and they don't let go. So nails are very political.
Yeah, guys, politics, where it comes from.
And politics isn't always black or white.
Yeah.
You see,
that part I agree with you.
Exactly. Yeah, so this is all symbolism. Work with me. Yin yang. Work with me here, guys. Keep up. Anyway, Botsang, where do we find you online?
Thanks,
sir?
Fresh. And I am at botsangm@gmail.com. And for political bookings and, you know, political and official engagements, and 082-485-9100. And also on social media at botsangm and X. Facebook, and hey, I'm starting to get used to TikTok and Instagram. And by the way, I must complain. Fresh, can you please shout at the viewer? They've dropped the book sales. I don't know whether people are broke in January, but they've dropped the book sales. Guys, I still have over 100 copies of Life with a Question Mark, and Fresh has pushed me to publish my new upcoming book very soon. So
absolutely.
I need to sell the remaining books in order to go and print the upcoming firebrand of a book.
Okay, so we have 100 books left to sell.
Yeah.
Okay, so please get in touch with Botsang. And his book is absolutely amazing. Netflix, if you're watching this, you might have a movie on your hands. So also get yourselves a copy. We are done with this week's edition of Hashtag Politricks with Botsang Moiloa. Coming to you from AM Studios, downtown Johannesburg. We're part of the Africa Podcast Network. Shout out to Pezulu Works for the cinematography. You guys always make us look good. Pezulu Works also do weddings. They do music videos. They cover festivals. If you've got an event, a massive event, and you want the after movie to look like a movie, get in touch with Pezulu Works. Our imaging, shout out Otis the Floor Fraser, guest Botsang Moiloa, creative producer Krivesh Mohan, and our show producer Keletso Modisakeng. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Till next week, have a great week in spite of yourselves.